Shallan sat down on the plush, white bed and sank almost down to her neck. What had they made this thing out of? Air and wishes? It felt luxurious. In her sitting room, Thumps announced the footmen arriving with her trunks. They left a moment later, closing the door. For the first time in quite a long while, Shallan found herself not fighting for her survival or worrying about being murdered by one of her traveling companions. So, she fell asleep. Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance. This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 39, 40, and 41 of Words of Radiance. We are trying to power through this part 3. It is a very long part. I know that we're not going to have a hard time getting through 4 and 5 because they are so exciting, but we're really trying to get through these chapters. If you are behind in your reading and you might want to make sure you catch up, please go back and read what you need to read and find us afterwards. If you've picked the wrong episode by accident, you definitely don't want to miss it on the action, so make sure you're in the right place. And if you are in the right place, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and normally I call him Jack, but since his older brother is missing, I'm going to call him non-Jack. It's Jack!
How are you doing?
Not bad. Apparently you have become the new heir of the household.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Non-Bull Jack?
Non-Balat Jack, yeah.
Non-Balak.
You've become delicious Indian bread. Non-Jack.
Ooh. Oh.
I love naan bread.
I love naan bread. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the food.
That might be, let me just say for the record, that might be the worst intro I've done in the, how many of our episodes that we've done of this.
there's naan balat.
Naan balak. Maybe I should have spent more time on it, maybe. So yeah, we're doing 3 chapters today, 39,
yes,
40, and 41, but let's
Chapter
start with the first
39,
one.
Yeah. What did you think of this one? So, heterochromatic.
I like this chapter a lot.
Yeah, me too. It's cool.
I like any flashback we get for Shallan. And this really gives us an idea of how her father runs his household and how, like, the kids are kept separate from everyone. And they're like, he runs with this seen but not heard type scenario.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yep.
Yeah, it's just really, it's not cool.
No, it's not cool. They certainly don't paint the father in a very positive light at all, and they're continuing this. However, we still don't know what happened with regards to... So, I'm going to reserve, you know, I'm going to try to be the good versatilian and not judge him entirely based on that. We can certainly have opinions based on his behavior and the way he's treating Shallan, the way he's treating his kids, and the way he's treating his staff, and like finding out about beating staff members and stuff like that. Like this is horrendous. And,
yeah. So he is not a very good guy.
And Shallan is watching this like she's watching some horror movie. Like, why is no one stepping up to him?
Yeah. Like, she's like, maybe hopefully someone will do something.
Right. And it just never appears to occur. Like,
I don't want to like give up the ghost here, but we know that someone does something. Because we know the big reveal at the end of Way of Kings is that
that's
she killed her father. Or at the very least that she feels like she's responsible
that
for
she
his
did.
Death.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the other part of the story that I also want to reserve judgment on is that it appears that, you know, they're painting it that he killed his wife. They're kind of, you know, leading up to that. And also Shallan believes that she's, you know, responsible or has, you know, killed her father.
Right. The story he's selling to people is that her lover killed her and then the lover killed himself.
Right.
Right. That's the story that he's trying to sell to people. So.
Right.
And the brothers are like desperately wanting Shallan to step up here because she was there. They're like, you were there. You saw it. And she's like, I don't remember nothing. Like, I was literally mute for like months and months and months. Like, I'm just coming out of my shell. And now you want me to, like, you know, confront my trauma again? Like, she's like, I don't
remember.
Do we know
how old she was?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It was probably like a year or two before this. So maybe she's like 11 or 10 or something. I don't really know. We'd have to look back at the original chapter that has the flashback, her very, very first flashback, which we can do.
Right. Yeah, no, that'd be good to know her age.
Here we go. Red carpets once white. It's 6 years ago.
Okay? Right.
And we just heard in the Polona episode, she told Polona that she was 17.
17 years of age,
so
yeah.
She was 11 years old when
11.
Her mom died.
Wow, eh?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, so.
That's brutal.
That's some quick research. Holy shit. Look at that.
That was almost like we had a producer on the show.
Yeah, I know. Producer Sean. What?
Producer. I was going to say, where?
We need a producer.
It was one of those producer leprechauns.
Oh.
He just showing up on the show.
Found the information out of thin air. All right, so
let's get to it. Okay, so. Heterochromatic. So first of all, David Bowie, this is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't think heterochromatic comes up in the chapter at all. Unless if it does, I don't remember.
No. Well, it does because we get to encounter a character that has one eye
different than
the other, right?
Right. They just don't say the word, I guess.
Right. Right. So that's why I said David Bowie. So we've got Bowie in there. In this chapter, which is good. 4 years ago, so father held feasts. This is always referring to Shallan's father.
Mm-hmm.
He held feasts because he wanted to pretend that everything was all right.
Right.
I like that.
It's like you just continue on, right? Move on. Let's keep doing the same thing we always do.
Mm-hmm. Then the next day, after everyone was gone, he would sit at his table and listening to the scribes tell him how impoverished he had grown.
Right.
Shallan saw him afterwards, sometimes holding his forehead, staring straight ahead at nothing. So he's just, again, I love the way this chapter paints him as, you know, the man that's just largely pretending that he's something else.
Right.
Which, ironically, is what Shallan
does as well. Right.
Right.
This is clearly, these moments here that we're reading are clearly before, what's his name again? What did we got his name this chapter, her father.
I have that
Lynn.
That's it. Yeah.
So Lynn DeVar eventually gets help from the Ghostbloods in the form of a soulcaster to be able to fabricate wealth. Right.
Right.
This is clearly before that because she's like, you know, she says, I know we have nothing, and he's getting these headaches from having to spend all this money on these feasts and stuff, and he just doesn't.
Right.
They're destitute right now. So this is clearly yep. before this deal gets brokered.
Right. You've met my daughter, of course, and he would show her off at these parties.
Right.
As the jewel of House DeVar, our pride above all others.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just kind of grotesque that that being paraded around is something that, you know, he shows off like a bauble, you know,
like a prized axe hound or,
but again, it's an 11-year-old bauble.
Right.
Right.
Which is even more creepy.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. There's something about it that doesn't feel right. The drink and the slaves were a way to display riches father didn't actually possess.
Right.
Shallan had begun helping with the accounts. This is cool.
Yeah.
She knew the truth of their finances. I like this because it adds another little thing onto Shallan that I didn't know about.
And another set of skills.
Yeah. So Shallan, the accountant, the 11-year-old accountant.
Yeah. She, what'll end up happening in her future is her kids will be kidnapped. And then on the phone, she'll say, I have a certain set of skills. And then it'll be like a whole trilogy. I do find this important because we just had a moment where she said to, Sabariel in the present, I don't know how I'm going to be useful to you, but I am useful. And they're telling us now, here's another part of Shallan that you didn't know about, which is that she can balance the books and do the accounts and all this stuff. So that'll probably come out, that she'll be able to do that for Sabariel.
The evening's chill Mm-hmm. There's the there's our chill word again. Was offset by the crackling hearth. On the next sentence, I thought it was nice to have that that chill reference once again. The servants were pouring wine, and she was having yellow, which was mildly intoxicating. While of course her father was drinking the violet, fully alcoholic strength, and he makes a rather uncomfortable toast coming up here, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
They'd received a letter from Helleran, the oldest, 6 months ago, along with a book by the famous Yasna Kolin for Shallan to read. So there's Yasna, even at a younger age.
Yeah, she's like 13 by now.
Present, but not, you know, just as a name, right?
Mm-hmm.
That night, father had beaten one of the maids near to death.
Yeah.
She's referring to, these... earlier incidents with her father. Isan still walked with a limp.
Right.
The fact that she can remember her name, I also thought was again like Kaladin.
Right.
She remembers the servant's name, right? Mm-hmm. Isan.
Well, I don't think that Shallan, we have to be careful here, because I don't think this is Shallan remembering 4 years ago. This is us seeing 4 years ago. These flashbacks are not the characters having memories.
Right.
This is us glimpsing their past.
Note.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Shallan read the note to her father in a trembling whisper. It hadn't said much, mostly veiled threats. And right, that night, father had beaten one of the maids to death. Isan still walked with him. Yeah, so it's just an observation.
Right.
Not necessarily from Shallan's... but however, the next line is, nobody does anything at all to resist him, Shallan thought.
Right. She thinks that now... So, she thinks that now 4 years ago.
Right.
She's not
right.
thinking that now, present time, looking back at 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think the naming of it is, I think it's something.
I think that it's good for Shallan to remember the maid's names or to know them. She's not such a uppity light eyes that she doesn't know her servants' names, which...
That's what I took from it, which I thought was really nice.
I just want us to be careful as to not, this is not Shallan remembering this time in her life and still knowing that name all these years later. This is us glimpsing her past, unencumbered by her present kind of thing.
Yeah. I think it's cool that it's mentioned. I think it's really neat.
Yeah.
Shallan's three other brothers sat in a huddled knot at their own table. They avoided looking at their father or interacting with the guests.
Right.
Sphere goblets glowed on the tables, but the room as a whole could have used more light. Neither spheres nor hearthlight were enough, it seemed, to drive out the gloom. She thought that her father liked it that way.
Yeah.
She thought that her father liked it that way, but maybe she was wrong. And again, if the lights are a little dim, maybe somebody's absorbing.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe there's also the possibility that her father likes to keep things dim because it's harder to see you, to see the mm-hmm. real you in light. You know, he's not a good dude. So existing in the darkness is probably more his style. He does invite people over, though. This time, it's Brightlord Tavanar and his wife.
And he's got a deep red silk coat on,
mm-hmm,
which I thought was really cool.
They have a daughter here, which is... They brought their daughter, which is, kind of cool for non-Balat later, because the two of them give each other googly eyes. they didn't really want to be here, these guests, though, because her father... it's got a reputation and there's all these rumors out there, but her dad, her father in House Devar is more important politically. So they have to have good relations with him because having him as a friend is more valuable than having him as an enemy. So they came to this feast, even though they probably didn't really want to be here, you know?
Right. Shallan picks at her food as her father is boasting about his new axehound breeding studs. He spoke of their prosperity, and it just says lies.
Right. Shallan grew up in a house of lies.
So it's almost like pattern is there, like, you know.
Almost. Commenting on it, right?
Yeah, commenting on
it. Yeah.
She did not want to contradict him. It says here that as he's boasting, you know, he was always good to her, yet shouldn't someone do something?
Right.
So again... You know, from her point of view, like, I think that she's referring to he was always good to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So from her memory, and then shouldn't someone do something? Halloran might have, but he'd left them.
Yeah.
He'd abandoned them. That's pretty harsh. He shouldn't be doing the things he did, growing drunk, beating the dark eyes. After the first course was passed during this feast, Shallan noticed something. Balot, whom father had started calling non-Balot.
Meaning the heir.
That's just another way of indicating that the father is just done with Halloran.
Right.
Kept glancing at the guests. Tavanar's daughter caught Non-Balot's eye. And they exchanged glances. Father didn't seem to notice. He eventually stood and raised his cup to the room and said, "Tonight we celebrate good neighbors and strong wine."
Right.
And Tavanar, this other Bright Lord, and his wife hesitantly raised their cups because it says a little bit later here, a good Vorin Bright Lord, you're not supposed to celebrate drunkenness.
Right.
So it's kind of uncomfortable. It seems that Lin just can't really read the room.
Right.
He's not really, you know, he's either a bad Vorin, and he's just not really, you know, up on how others might feel. Like, oh, let's celebrate this strong wine that we're all drinking. And,
right. Yeah, you're not supposed to get drunk. Yeah. But the thing that he wants to celebrate is kind of awkward because he's like, Bright Lord Gevelmar is sending me his youngest daughter to marry, which,
right,
gross, first off. And the Ardents that are here at the estate on the manor are going to marry them. And
right.
He's like, I've been without a wife too long. By the end of the month, I'll have a new wife. And everyone's just like super awkward. Like, this is awkward. Like, you killed your last wife, bro. Or so the rumors, right?
And Shallan feels cold, pulling her shawl across her shoulders. And then her father says, well, why does nobody speak? I have just become betrothed. You look like a bunch of storming Alethi. We're Vedan. Make some noise, you idiots. So he begins insulting them when they don't celebrate his news. And of course, like, some people start reluctantly, like, slowly clapping.
And then he brings out these gifts, right, for the kids.
He says to the void with all of you. So I don't know, to the void. That's a first little insult, I think. I don't know if we've heard that one before. To the void with all of you. Gifts for my children to mark the occasion. And he brings out these gifts with a wave of his hand to his servants. And he says, don't know why I bother. Bah. I don't know why the others bother with you. The boys got daggers, and the girls got a popple.
A popple?
No, just kidding. Well, whatever. It's 80s.
It's a toy backpack popple.
The girls got a Rainbow Bright. Boys got daggers. Shallan was gifted a necklace, with fat silvery links. It says. He never shouted at her. So it's interesting that throughout all these observations, then you'll get like a perspective from Shallan, and she's like saying, you know, he never did that to
me.
And
then she also says that, like, Jushu,
that's interesting,
one of her younger brother, resents her for that. You know, like, she kind of gets away with just being there, whereas they can't get away with just being there. They get yelled at, they get berated, and and at least Jushu is starting to resent her for her being able to escape all the madness.
Because he won't shout at her. So one of her brothers is kind of jealous of that fact, and she's saying that she kind of wishes that she did get some of the shouting. Because then maybe Jushu wouldn't hate her or resent her.
Then all of a sudden, the doors bust open, and David Bowie walks in.
The feast hall doors slammed open. Yeah, a tall man in dark clothing at the threshold. What is this? Father says. Who interrupts my feast? One of his eyes was an intense blue, and the other a dark brown. Hence the chapter name, heterochromatic. So. Both light-eyed and dark, and Shallan felt a chill. So again, the chill is present. A Devar house servant comes up to the table, whispers to her father, and it looked like, it says here, drained the thunder right out of father's right. expression, and his jaw dropped. So he's now feeling threatened right. by this new visitor, by the heterochromatic visitor. I've been sent by His Highness, High Prince Valam, ruler of these lands. It has come to his attention that dark rumors persist in these lands. Rumors regarding the death of a light-eyed woman. And he falls his eyes, he puts his eyes onto...
the chicken coming to roost.
Onto her father. Yeah, and her father says, my wife was killed by her lover, who then killed himself.
Right, there it is. This is the story, right, that he's pushing.
Yeah. Others tell a different story, Bright Lord Lindivar, the newcomer says. Such rumors are troublesome. They provoke dissatisfaction with His Highness. If a Bright Lord under his rule were to have murdered a light-eyed woman of rank, it is not something he can ignore. So, Father waves away, waves his hands towards Shallan and the visitors, and he says, away, give me peace. You there, messenger, let us speak alone. No need to drag mud into the right. into the hallway. So he's trying to clean the situation up. So his guests, and I think the next, too eager to be going. So the Tavanars are, they're loving this. They're like,
thank God that guy. Remember that night when we had that awkward dinner with the Devars, and then David Bowie showed up, and he kicked us out. Fuck, thank God for David Bowie.
We get to go home and get caught up on Succession, so we're good.
Yeah, there you go.
So they're eager to get going. The girl did a glance back at Balat, so they share another little glance. So that's cute. And father says, "Child, go sit with your brothers." He says,
"This
to
guy
Shallan,
here, this
who's actually going to be in the room. The kids are just going to be a wave. They're in the same room.
This is huge room, right? It's this huge friggin' dining hall. Yeah. So they're far enough away that they." That they're still in the same room, but they can't really hear, although Shallan pretends to be able to hear later, which is hilarious. This dude, though, this guy that's sent from the High Prince, this guy reminds me of Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones. He's the bastard son.
Oh, yeah.
He's an assassin.
I can see.
He's an executioner. He's sent to do the High Prince's bidding.
Yeah.
So he looks like David Bowie, but acts like Ramsay Bolton a little bit. Though he's not flailing anybody. He's not like peeling the skin off anybody.
I'm not. But... I don't think I've actually pictured David Bowie in this character.
It's too late now. This is David Bowie.
It's just the eye thing.
If Sting can be in Dune, David Bowie, or someone who's like David Bowie, could be in Stormlight. Right.
Right. It was Redden, the High Prince's bastard son. His father used him as an executioner assassin. You're right. Right. So that's very intimidating in terms of his presence.
A very specific type of man sent for a very specific reason, right? Like, he's not just a messenger. He's not just a messenger. He is the message.
The next paragraph, there's something in it that sort of breaks my heart, and that is that Shallan is mentioning her fine silk dress. And she says, the voluminous way it enveloped her made her feel as if she weren't really there and that only the dress mattered. So again, like a bauble, you've got this amazing dress on, but really nobody knows anything about you, your talents, what you like, what you're about. It's just, you're this dress. You're the jewel of House Devar.
Yeah. It's, it is a little sad that she doesn't feel like she's got her own personality or her own being. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, like, it's almost like she's like one of the gemstones, right? Like, and you can't help but wonder if she's like a gemstone that someone else is going to take and then siphon from, you know, like it seemed like their light had gone out when mother died.
Right.
Says here. In terms of their house, their family. Balat says, Shallan, are you well? And she shakes her. She shook herself. Can I see the daggers? They looked quite fine from my table. Wakim just stared at the fire, but Berlat tossed the dagger to her. She caught it clumsily and then pulled it from its sheath, admiring the way the metal folded and reflected in the hearth light. The boys were watching Flamespran dance on the fire. This was all during this uncomfortable exchange between right. Redden and her father.
She says that the brothers never talk anymore. She says like they don't talk to each other anymore.
Right.
And then she's like, maybe, you know, Bilal says, I wish I could hear what they're saying. Maybe they'll drag him
what
away.
Saying,
that
yeah.
would be fitting for what he's done. Even the kids believe the father has done something here. And then Shallan's like,
right.
he didn't kill mother. And then she's like, oh, then what happened? And then Balat's like, okay, then what happened then? And she's like,
And then it says here, she didn't know.
She couldn't think. Yeah.
She couldn't think. Right. Not at that time, in that day. Had her father actually done it? She felt cold again, despite the fire's warmth.
And then she says, she thinks someone needed to do something. And
right.
there's a moment here where something,
and then she says they're talking about plants.
Yeah. So this is our first taste of Shallan being humorous and quick-witted here with her brothers. Because then after she pulls off this little joke here, they're like, "You should do this more often."
Yeah, the
this
joke
is really cool.
Here, yeah.
Like, let's read the joke. It's really great. She's like, "Where they're talking about plants."
They're talking about plants. Plants. Balat said flatly. Yes, I can hear them faintly. I can't hear a thing. Shallan shrugged. My ears are better than yours. Yes, plants. Father is complaining that the trees in his gardens never listen when he tells them to obey. They have been dropping the leaves because of a sickness, he says, and they refuse to grow new ones. Have you tried beating them for their disobedience? The messenger asks. Father says, all the time. I even break off the limbs, yet they still do not obey. It's untidy. At the very least, they should clean up after themselves. This is a problem, says the messenger, as trees without foliage are hardly worth keeping. Fortunately, I have the solution. My cousin once had trees that acted this way, and he found that all he needed to do was sing to them, and their leaves popped right back out. Ah, of course, her father says. I will try that immediately. I hope that it works for you.
Well,
if it doesn't,
it
will certainly be, if it does, I will certainly be relieved.
Yeah, and then everyone's like,
baffled.
What?
Everyone's like staring at her, and she's like waiting for them to get it. Finally, Jushu cocks his head. He was the youngest of the brothers, just above Shallan herself, relieved, and Balat bursts into laughter.
Yeah.
Loud enough for their father to hear, who looks over them probably with a scowl. And Balat's like, oh, that is awful. That's purely awful, Shallan. You should be ashamed. So she makes this totally bad joke. Really,
yeah, it's really great. It's kid humor. They're all kids. It's really funny because it's like, it takes so long to get there. It's not like a quick joke. Like Shallan builds this up. She's in for the long haul here. This is like an aristocrat's joke. Like, let me take 10 minutes and set this joke up. she right away says, you know, we should laugh more. And the kids are like, this hasn't been, this hasn't been a place for laughter.
Ooh, there's a little sentence before that. Yeah. I don't want to forget this. I actually thought for a moment, Balat says that you could really hear them, you little void bringer.
Well, we've talked about how people use that as like colloquially, as an insult or whatever.
I know. I'm just saying.
This is years before that it becomes a problem.
Storms, but that felt good. Yeah, yeah. And she says we should laugh more. This hasn't been a place for laughter. Jushu says, sipping his wine. Because of father? Shallan asks. There's one of him and four of us. We just need to be more optimistic. Yeah. Being optimistic does not change facts, her brother Balat says. I wish Helleran hadn't left. Shallan says, do not begrudge him his travels, Tent Balat. There are so many places to see, places we will probably never visit. Let one of us go to them. Think of the stories he will bring back to us, the colors. Interesting that she says the colors, eh?
Yeah, and then Balat says, I wouldn't mind a little more color around here.
A little more color around here. Anything would be a nice change from father's face, says Jushu. Oh my God. Shallan says, now, don't be down on father's face. It's quite adept at doing its duty, which is reminding us all that there are worse things than his odor. It's really quite a noble calling. Shallan, Wickham says. He looked dramatically unlike Jushu. Don't say such things where Father could hear. Shallan says, he's engrossed in conversation. But you are right, I probably shouldn't mock our family. House Devar is distinctive and enduring. What I find really interesting about this conversation is that if she's 11, she's pretty astute.
And she's
pretty verbose. She almost could have a role on, what's that show where the, oh my God, it's escaping me now. It was not Party of Five. It's,
Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek. Yeah,
like
because those characters
the way spoke like they were in their 40s, who had gone to university. And
yeah,
like,
they were the most verbose, like a pedantic, or like it was crazy. Like, I mean, whatever. You know, if you like the show, you like the show. It's fine. But in terms of some of the things that they're thinking and saying, like, come on.
I mean, I never watched that show. I definitely don't have a Pacey for Life tattoo on my back.
No, I didn't watch it either, but I've seen maybe a handful of episodes, and I was like, whoa, that's
so, yeah, she's setting up another little joke here. She said the House Devar is distinctive and enduring. The same could be said as from a wart. And then the father's like, stop that racket. They all start laughing, and he's like, stop that. And then Balat's like, it's a feast. Did you not ask us to be more
feast?
You know, so the kids are having fun. The father doesn't like it when the kids have fun.
Right. Yeah, the father. Oh, yeah, you having fun?
Shut
I gotta stop that right now.
And then
Balat says, "Storm, Shallan, when did you become so clever?" Clever.
Yeah,
she
and then all of a sudden, she like shrinks back into herself again, and like, you know, the trauma is still not completely gone. But here's another moment where she comes out of herself, and we see peaks of the Shallan we're gonna know later, right? Even though it's not fully formed.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah, her father tries to do does a fairly good job actually of keeping it down. And then she's shying away, and I think she's saying here, those are just things I read in a book. And Balat says, well, you should read more of those books, small one. It seems brighter in here for it. So that's nice of her brother.
Let's get to this important part
nice.
Here where the messenger finally is done with the conversation with the father, and he puts it out to the kids. He's like, if there's anyone who could bear witness to what's happened and come to the High Prince, like, justice will be done, kind of thing, you know.
I like the way it describes his movement. It says here he stands up in a smooth motion, and he has this refinement as a shield that rebuffs her father's temper.
Like, he can't, like, that's her father's really cool. Anger can't get to him because he's just too high up.
Right. And says here, the next line is, Shallan envied him. So just observing this messenger confronting her father was great for her to experience. Like, she's like, oh, I want to be like him. It appears I will get nowhere with this conversation, says the messenger. I came prepared for that inevitability. The High Prince has given me authority, and I would very much like to know the truth of what happened in this household. Any light eyes of birth who can provide witnesses will be welcomed. And then Jushu says, they need the testimony of a light eyes. Father is important enough that they can't just remove him. And the messenger says, there was one who was willing to speak to us of the truth. He has since made himself unavailable. Do any of you have his courage? Will you come with me and testify to the High Prince of the crimes committed on these lands? Wow, what a moment.
He's calling them out. And the one
he's
who
calling them
was
out.
Willing to speak of the truth was Helleran, probably. But he's made himself unavailable because he's fucked off. He's taken off, right? So,
right. So Shallan is huddling in her chair. Wickham didn't look away from the flames. He's just been looking at the fire the whole time. Jushu looked like he might stand, and then turned to his wine, cursing, face growing red. Balat grabs the sides of his chair as if to stand, but then he has a glance with his father. His father's eyes get him to shrink back down. It was now when his rage became cold that he grew truly dangerous. This was when father got quiet. This was when the yelling stopped.
See, this is...
And Balat whispers... He'll kill me. He'll kill me if I say a word. He'll kill me. Shallan's like, or Wickham says, well, you could do it, Shallan. Father won't dare hurt you. Besides, you actually saw what happened. I didn't, she whispers. but you were there. I don't know what happened. I don't remember it. It didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't.
Right.
That's the next line.
That's her That's her thinking, it didn't happen. It didn't.
It didn't happen. She's trying to block it out. A whirling group of translucent flower petals stirred among them, fading into view. These were shame spren. Balot was staring at the floor. He's got shame spren coming around him. It's crazy.
It's so funny how this moment, you know, the father is like staring daggers at the kids. And that moment when he says, this was when father got quiet. This was when the yelling stopped. Father's yelling, at least. Like, this is when he became the most dangerous, was when he became quiet, right?
When he became quiet. Because then you knew, because he's used to yelling and then getting what he wants from the yelling.
Right.
And if that doesn't work,
that's when he gets quiet.
Then he'll elevate, just like anyone does.
Right.
If your first tactic doesn't work, you elevate your next tactic.
Yeah.
So when it got quiet, that meant that father was going to further tactics.
Yeah, he's going to another level now.
Beyond just yelling. So it gets worse. I know. It's a really.
So the thing that I find really crazy is that, like, he's staring daggers at them. You know, Balot's like, he's going to kill me if I say something. And then the whole lot of them get surrounded by shame spren. They're all ashamed for not saying something. And the funny thing about spren is that you can't really hide shit. Like, this guy, Redden, this high executioner from the High Prince, he would see the shame spren. He would see the kids surrounded by shame spren and be like,
"Well,
he says,
I see." He says, "I see. If any of you remember the truth at some point in the future, you will find willing ears in Vedinar."
Yeah.
Father says, you will not tear this house apart, you bastard. We stand by one another.
Mm-hmm.
Save for those who can no longer stand, I assume. Leave this house, he says to the messenger. The messenger gave Father a look of disgust. I am a bastard, but even I am not as low as you.
Right.
His look seemed to say. He then left, sweeping the room and gathering his men outside, his terse orders indicating that he wished to be back on the road despite the late hour. Once he was gone, Father placed both of his hands on the table, breathed out deeply, and said, "Go," to the four of them. They hesitated, and then Father says, "Go." The children, they fled the room, Shallan scrambling after her brothers. She was left with the sight of her father sinking down into his seat, holding his head. The gift he'd given her, the fine necklace, sat forgotten in the open box on the table just before him.
Right. So what do you think about this chapter?
Great chapter. Well, it just builds on the tension regarding this event that took place, like Shallan's mother's death.
Right.
We get to find out. I mean, the biggest thing you get to find out here is that the father's got the story that it was her lover that killed her, and then he killed himself.
Right.
That's a big reveal.
We also get that that since then her father has been violent with the staff. Before it was the maids were frightened of him and were scurrying into corners whenever he'd come.
Yeah.
But now we know for sure he has beaten the fuck out of a maid.
Yeah.
This guy is violent. Yeah. What's your highlight of this really weird, kind of intense chapter?
The highlight, I don't know. I mean, I think I think the highlight is her telling the joke.
I think so too.
I think it's her telling the joke. I think that is what, you know, it's what her brothers needed to weather through this another storm from father.
Right. Some levity. Right?
So, yeah. So some levity. Yeah, exactly. So
I would say the same thing for my highlight. I wrote down that, but now that I'm thinking about the shame spren thing, you know, I think that's got to be you know, the spren probably make it very hard for people to cover their feelings. When you're really angry with someone, but you're not, you're trying not to let them know, fucking anger spren sprout up from the ground and you're like, fuck. Like, you know what I mean? It would be really interesting
to be a
detective in this world. Yeah. Yeah. It would be really interesting to be a detective in this world because
you've got,
like,
a decided advantage.
Yeah. The spren kind of almost give you a heads up on what's going on.
unless you can suppress the spren.
Well, I think that depends on the amount of emotion, right?
If you,
if you stole a couple of kremlings from someone's kremlin collection, you're not going to suffer any shame spren from that. But something major like not being able to tell on your dad because you think he killed your mom, shame spren are coming because the emotions are stronger, right? So, I find it all really fascinating in how the fuck can you get away with shit in this world? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot harder, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, great chapter. I like the, I like this Redden character. I think he's interesting. He's smooth. He's, he's willing to see the letter of the law applied and the wishes of the,
I like him
now,
too.
Who did he say was the ruler of the lands again?
Valar.
Exactly. High Prince Valam.
Mm-hmm.
Or Valam. Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. Loved it. Love the chapter. Awesome. It's great.
All right. Next chapter. Chapter 40. Palona. I like this.
Palona.
My Palona. I always get. I told you this that in order to get my kids to enjoy mashed potatoes, I taught them the My Sharona song.
Mashed potatoes.
And I'd go mashed potatoes. And they're like, they love mashed potatoes now. I got them to sing a song about it.
Perfect.
Yeah, it worked. I don't know why it worked, but.
Well, this little chapter is pretty cool. We do get, it's not a flashback this time. We're back to another excerpta from Words of Radiance, which says that they responded immediately and with great consternation is undeniable, as these were primary among those who would forswear and abandon their oaths. The term recreance was not then applied, but has since become a popular title by which this event is named.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so talking about the Knights Radiance giving up their oaths, and
I'm so looking forward to more of that whole
to knowing
event,
more about
which
it.
Which is so funny. Well, because I'm sure it's going to come full circle back to Way of Kings at the beginning, right? When
I want to say something right now that, you know, I hate doing this kind of thing, but there is something that happened in the first book.
Yeah,
a vision that Dalinar had.
Right,
that you were able to see. That had Knights Radiance giving up their swords and their shards.
Right. They dropped them, right?
At Feverstone Keep.
Okay, I didn't remember the name of the place.
Yeah,
right.
That's when,
Feverstone Keep.
Dalinar had inhabited this character Leaf, who was like a guardsman at the Feverstone Keep.
Yes.
And all these soldiers were coming and they thought they were gonna have to fight them, and then all of a sudden these Knights Radiance just abandoned all their blades and their plate on the ground. And then there was a furious rush of all these people from this keep to go and steal these valuable items.
These valuable items, right.
So, not sure if necessarily that moment is the recreance or if it was part of, but that definitely looked like knights abandoning their gear. Whether
abandoning
or not they abandoned their oaths
right.
in the same moment, it was very similar.
Well, and this... So in Palona, we've got Sabariel. So this is a Shallan and Sabariel chapter.
Yeah.
He shared his carriage with Shallan. They rode toward his war camp, and Pattern was vibrating softly on her skirt.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
She has to shush him a couple times.
Yeah. I don't want to go there.
And Sabariel is like
soldiers,
sleeping. He's sleeping.
Her soldiers were safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sabariel's sleeping. Her soldiers are safe. She had a base of operations now and an income. So this is cool. Like she's come away from that meeting well set up.
Right.
The Colin House hadn't yet demanded that Shallan turn over Yasna's things, so she still needed to approach Navani about not only that, but also in asking her to help with the research.
Right. That's kind of a really, really good thing for Shallan, because Shallan's got all this stuff, and normally they'd be like, okay, well, we want all of her stuff back because it belongs to us now.
Yeah,
but
Shallan still
gets
has
to
it.
Keep it because the meeting was crazy and Navani left and
Navani left.
Yeah, so it was really
those matters
for her.
Haven't been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it means she's got a she's got more than a few reasons to go back and speak with
these
people,
right? And if she wants to copy
people,
anything,
right?
She's got time now to, like, you know what I mean? Like, look through the stuff and keep some of the stuff she wants to keep. She should, it's really great.
She should totally do that. I love the next line here. Oh, my gosh. It says, now Shallan just needed to save the world.
Right?
And yes, that's right. The jewel of House Dvar needs to save the world.
Yeah.
I'm in complete agreement.
It's so great.
Sabariel snorts... snorted and shook awake, and wiping his cheek, he says, "You've changed." "Excuse me," she says, "you look younger. In there, I would have guessed you were 20, maybe 25. But now that I see you, I can't. You can't be older than 14. "I am 17," she says. "Same difference. I could have sworn your dress was more vibrant before. Your features were sharper, prettier, but must have been the light. Do you always make a habit of insulting the looks of young ladies, or is it only after you drool in front of them?"
So?
Shallan. So she's obviously, you know, using Stormlight, right? So
yeah. So when she left the carriage with Gaz and Vatham to approach the palace, she says in the book, she thinks she... sucked up a little bit of Stormlight without even realizing she did, kind of on instinct, and she used that to make herself look like 20 to 25 years old.
Yeah.
Better, more vibrant. Her dress
more
looked
mature.
Better. Yeah, her features were sharper. this is really great. You know, this is really awesome.
Cool.
She's doing it, you know, with instinct now. And the thing that helped her focus it, we have to remember, is that she focused on the drawing of herself.
She did, herself. She was remembering the drawing.
Yeah.
Yep. So that was like
and
a reference of who she needed to be.
Yeah. It gave her a focus, a point of reference to what to, like, kind of appear as, which is really, really awesome.
Oh, yeah. No, we mentioned that before. Yeah. She's, I love it that the drawing, like, basically helped her pull that off.
Yeah.
Like, it's neat that her art, like, has such a purpose in this
Yeah,
in
it's
this
not
story.
Just frivolous. Like, you know, it's not just what Yasna thought it was at the beginning of Way of Kings.
Yeah.
It's an actual tool now. It's a utility.
Yeah.
It's part of her.
Well, she's so inspired by what she saw.
Yeah.
But it's really not that much different than showing it to Gaz and others, like,
and
you know, these depictions that...
Becoming a different
person. It's the same, I mean, not with art, but, I mean, in the case of Kaladin, he's not doing art, but he is taking someone and, you know, retraining them and showing them that they
have
another...
There's a new person there,
Yeah. So, And so in this case, of course, the art was the inspiration, and she's using that inspiration literally and infusing that inspiration with Stormlight...
Right. To look
to affect people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other little important part here is that we actually get, this is where we find out that she's 17. I'm sure it's said somewhere else in the first book that she was 17, but we could get a reminder here of how old she is, especially because we're like, oh, we just read something that was 4 years ago. So now we get to know how old she was in the previous chapter as well. So it's a really nice coupling here that they've done where, you know, Sanderson has kind of reminded us, remember, if this was 4 years ago, that means she was 13 in the last chapter.
13 in the last chapter,
right.
No, hang on. It was 6 years ago, wasn't it, in the previous chapter?
The previous chapter was 4. 6 years ago was one of the very first. The red carpet once white when her dad pulls her out of the
4
room.
4 years ago. So
that was 6 years ago.
So we had it wrong. It was not, she was not 11. She would have been 13.
No, she was 11 when her mom died. And this is 2 years later. This heterochromatic chapter was two years later after her mom died. And then another flashback was in the middle there. It was either 5 or 4.5 years ago.
So when it's saying, so for heterochromatic, when it says 4 years ago, that's 4 years prior from 17, right?
Yes.
Or no?
Yes, exactly. Four years ago from our present.
So that's
time.
What I was saying.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. She was 13, not 11. So I was thinking 11 for the previous and
she wasn't.
She was 13.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, perfect. This is Sabariel. He says, you weren't trained in the court, obviously. And this is after she insults him.
Yeah.
And he says, you weren't trained in the court, obviously. I like that, but be careful. Insult the wrong people in this place and retribution can be swift.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little tiny reminder
for
her to watch her tongue.
He doesn't mind it at all.
He doesn't mind it.
Yeah.
No,
she insulted him in the meeting in front of all the high princes, and he laughed.
Oh, yeah, and he started laughing.
She loved it.
Yeah,
he laughed about it. So, yeah.
I know, but I think he's warning her about her tongue. Just
yeah,
be careful.
Do that to Aladar or Sadeas, and it could be the end of you kind of thing.
A war camp flying Sibaril's banner. It bore the glyphs Sebes and Lael, stylized into a sky eel. So that's kind of cool. Yeah. Deep gold on a black field.
Yeah, it looks
so
nice.
Black and gold are his colors. That's nice. She turned her attention out the window and soon decided that this place was a war camp in name only.
Right.
The streets were straighter than you might have seen in a city and had grown naturally. But Shallan saw far more civilians than she did soldiers. They passed taverns, open markets, and shops, and tall buildings that could that surely could hold a dozen different families.
It's like an apartment building almost.
Yeah, solid wood and stone. So, like, his war camp is more like a flourishing city.
Right.
Like a, or like a, you know, like a proper town.
Yeah, there's a bunch of buildings have rounded roofs and corners to...
Well, she says to him, she says, rounded roofs? And she and then he responds, my engineers say they repel the winds better.
Yeah.
Also, buildings with rounded corners and sides. Yeah, but there's so many people.
Yeah.
Almost all permanent residents, he says.
Right.
I have the most complete force of tailors, artisans, and cooks in the camps. Already, I've set up 12 manufactories. Textiles and shoes, ceramics, several mills. I control the glass blowers as well.
Yeah, this dude, man.
Like, I know he plans ahead. This, I love what he says coming up here.
Yeah.
She says, from what I've heard, your forces are among the least successful in the war against the Parshendi. And he says, the others hunt quick income from gem hearts, but what they will spend their money on, my textile mills, will soon produce uniforms at a much cheaper price than they can be shipped in for. And my farmers will provide food far more varied than what is supplied through soul casting. I'm growing both Lavis and Talu, not to mention my hog farms. You sly eel, she says.
Yeah.
While the others fight a war, you've been building an economy. He says, I've had to be careful. I didn't want them to notice what I was doing at first. She says, clever, but why are you telling me?
Right.
And he says, well, you'll see it anyway, if you're to act as one of my clerks. Besides, the secrecy doesn't matter anymore. The manufactories are now producing and my armies barely go on a single plateau run a month. I have to pay Dalinar's fines for avoiding I think that's funny that when he doesn't join on the runs, he has to pay a fine.
Right, but it's worth it for him. It's worth the cost.
Absolutely, he says it's worth the cost. Anyway, the smarter high princes have figured out what I'm up to, and the others just think I'm a lazy fool.
Yeah.
And so you're not a lazy fool? Oh, of course I am, he says. Fighting is too much work, and besides, soldiers die, and that makes me pay out to their families. It's just useless all around. I saw the secret 3 years back. Everyone was motivated here, but nobody thought of the place as permanent, despite the value of those gem hearts, which ensured that Alethkar would always have a presence here.
Right. So, like, remember in the
crazy
first book, you were like, man, this place, they keep talking about this place becoming a city, and Sibaril saw it years ago.
Years ago. Well, he's completely in on it, and of course, it's so, I love the way that, I almost want to see it more now in this series, is the siphoning of things.
Right.
Like, you're drawing up Stormlight to be able to do these amazing abilities, right? Mm-hmm. You're siphoning this Stormlight. But he is, you know, then you've got these high princes on in this six-year-long war so far,
right.
Battling the Parshendi for gem hearts. So they collect all these gem hearts, they get all this wealth and whatnot, and yet he siphons that.
Right.
He takes those gem hearts and puts them in his pocket. Like, that's really neat.
Who do you think... I mean, this isn't in the book, but one of the things I like to think about is, you know how the King's Feast happens every week? Remember that King's Feast they talked about in the first book? This grand feast that happens every week that the king likes to throw? Who do you think provides all that food?
Right?
Right. So, Sibaril's got...
It's Sibaril.
He knows what's going on. And I really love this thing where he's all like, you know, I avoid going on plateau runs, but I pay the fines because it's worth the cost.
Right. It's worth the cost.
I have to pay out any soldiers' families who die. This way, I don't fucking have to go and do that. I don't go to war.
I know.
None of my soldiers die, so I don't have to pay them out.
And he says that it's useless. He says going to war is useless.
Yeah. It's cheaper for him to pay the fines that Dalinar has than for him to pay out the families that die from his fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's awesome.
No, he's thought it through, dude.
It's really awesome.
This is great. And you know what? It's funny because this is a big accounting kind of a thing.
Right.
Like, I'm wondering if Shallan's accounting skills will come back with this.
Well, I truthfully think that's the reason why in the last chapter mm-hmm. it was brought up that she was able to do the books at home. For her
right.
father's businesses, because
now she's going
to
do the books.
Now she needs to have, she needs to be able to have something to do. And this is an economy based yeah. high prince, so of course her talents of accounting and stuff are going to come into play. It's really yeah. cool. It's really really awesome.
Yeah. So they go to this modest manor style home, ornamental shale bark, a flagstone drive. It's got pillars out the front, and Sabarl says, "We probably have a room for you." Maybe in the cellars. Never do seem to have enough space for all the stuff I'm expected to have. Three full sets of dining furniture. Bah, as if I'm ever going to share anyone over. Or, sorry, as if I'm going to have anyone over.
Yeah.
She says, "You really don't think highly of the others, do you?" And he says, "I hate them. But I try to hate everyone. That way, I don't risk leaving anyone who is particularly deserving."
Right.
"Anyway, here we are. Don't expect me to help you out of the carriage." Well, there's a footman to do it anyways,
right.
So that's all right. But
yeah.
A short woman in a fine dress stood on the manor steps. Her hands were on her hips, and she had dark, curly hair. "Ah," Sabarl says, "the bane of my existence. Please try to hold your laughter until we separate. My frail, aging ego can no longer handle the mockery."
Right.
Shallan gave him a confused look, and the woman spoke. "Please tell me you didn't kidnap her, Turi." So, Turi Sabarl?
Yeah, she starts talking, and she's like, "Oh, I guess she's not Alethi at all," because earlier she's like, "Was she from Northern Alethkar?" And she's like, "Oh,
yeah.
Not Alethi at all." And then she's like, "Oh, wow, the fingernails rock-like
the fingernails,
cast of them. She's Herdazian."
Right. Herdazian,
yeah.
Right.
You know what? She's probably Wilpin's cousin, let's be honest.
And she also concludes that she was not a servant. And then Shallan thinks, of course, the mistress.
This is the mistress, yeah.
"So she insisted on coming with me, Pallona," Sabarl says. "I did not kidnap her." "I couldn't dissuade her. We'll have to give her a room or something." "And who is she?" "Some foreigner. When she said she wanted to come with me, it seemed to annoy old Dalinar, so I allowed it." He hesitated. "What was your name?" he asked.
Is he
pretending here?
No, I don't think actually, so. I don't think so.
He actually... Cause that's what I was wondering when I read it. I'm like, is he doing this like just to pretend like... that he's not bringing home a, you know, beautiful young woman.
Yeah, I don't think he remembers her name. I really don't think so.
Shallan Devar, says Shallan, bowing to Pallona. "She might be dark-eyed," I love this observation, "but she was apparently the head of this household."
Right.
Love it.
So give respect where it's due, right?
Right. So the Herdazian woman cocks an eyebrow and says, "Well, she is polite, which means she probably won't fit in here. I honestly can't believe you brought home a random girl because you thought it would annoy one of the other high princes." "Bah," Sabarl says, "woman, you make the most henpecked man in all of Alethkar." "We aren't in Alethkar," she says. "And I'm not even storming married," he says.
And then Pallona's like, "I'm not marrying you. Stop asking."
So stop asking.
So Sabarl,
I'm not marrying you.
She's his mistress. Yeah. But he's clearly asked her to marry him several
times. And she's not having it. Yeah. And then she says about Shallan, "She's far too young for you. I already used that line on Ruthar. It was delightful. He sputtered too much, or so much, you could have mistaken him for a storm." Pallona smiles and says, "There's mulled wine in your study." He sauntered toward the door. "Food? You ran the cook off, remember? Oh, right. Well, you could have made the food. As could you," she says.
Yeah.
"Bah, you're useless, woman. All you do is spend my money. Why do I put up with you again?" "Because you love me."
He's like, Sabarl
says,
"Be that.
Can't be that. I'm not capable of love. Too much of a curmudgeon. Well, do something with the girl." And he walks inside.
Yeah. And then I like how Pallona here is, asks Shallan, what really happened? Like,
what really happened, child?
He said for truth, because he's, you know, he's just a loudmouth who talks a lot. I can't take what he said for truth. So what really happened? And then she's like, actually, he didn't really say anything untrue. He didn't, you know, he wasn't really lying. He did leave out a few facts. But I did come to get married to Adelin Colin, and I thought it would be better for me not to stay in their household.
Right.
Which would leave me too restricted if I did. So I sought other options.
And this is hilarious.
Yeah.
When she says, huh, that actually makes it sound like Turi. Don't call me that.
He's in the house already. Yeah.
I like the fact that he heard that.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to be called that. That the idiot did something politically savvy. She finishes her sentence. That I loved.
Yeah.
Shallan says, well, I did kind of bully him into taking me in, and I implied publicly that he was going to give me a very generous stipend. Too large a one, the voice from inside
in the house
says.
Again,
he's still listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this.
And then Shallan's like, is he standing
in there
listening?
Polona says, he's good at skulking. Well, come along. Let's get you settled. Make sure you tell me how much he's promised, even by implication, for your stipend. I'll make sure it happens.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Lots of marble and crystal inside, statues trimmed with gold, sweeping broad staircase leading to a second floor balcony. She hardly deserved such rich decor.
Yeah.
And then she thinks, I suppose I shouldn't feel that way. I'm betrothed to a prince.
Yeah, she does deserve it.
Still, so much finery reminded her of her father. The lace jewelry, the silk he'd given her in attempts to make her forget about other times.
This is what we're getting at from before, right? You said in the last chapter that, you know, it made her think she's wearing that too fine dress and it makes her think like she doesn't even exist. It's only the dress that exists. And her father did this over and over again with all these stuff trying to make her forget, right?
Right. Well, I also think it speaks to her character that baubles and opulence and all this sort of thing, it's not really her.
Right.
She doesn't, I mean, you can admire it, but it's not important to her. In fact, it reminds her of horrible times.
Mm-hmm.
Shallan says, excuse me? Servants, Polona says, have you your own lady's maid? And she says, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 18 soldiers, though, and 5 slaves. And then she says, and they'll be helping you change clothes?
Yeah.
Shallan blushed. No, I mean that I'd like them to be housed if you can manage it. I can. I can probably even find something productive for them to do. You'll want them paid out of your stipend, I assume. Your maid as well, which I'll get for you. Food is served at second bell, noon, and 10th bell. If you want something at other times, ask at the kitchens. Cook might swear at you, assuming I can get him to come back this time. We've a storm cistern, so there's usually running water. If you want it warm for a bath, the boys will need an hour or so to heat it.
Right.
Running water, she says.
Yeah.
She'd seen this for the first time in Carbranth. As I said, we have a storm cistern. Each high storm fills it, and the shape of the cistern sifts out the creme. Don't use the system until midday after high storm, or the water will be brown, and you will look entirely, she says, and you look entirely too eager about this. She says, sorry, we didn't have this sort of thing in Yaakoved. Welcome to civilization. I trust you left your club and loincloth at the door. That's funny.
That's funny.
Let me set to finding you a maid. So that from Polona, that's a little bit of wit coming back from her
for
too,
sure.
Eh? Like,
for sure.
That's totally cool.
Wit lives in all of us, right?
Yeah. Shallan says, Polona, yes, child. Thank you. Polona smiles. Winds know you're not the first to, you're not the first stray he's brought home. Some of us even end up staying.
So, like, he's got a history of, like, bringing in people to his household and being kind, but he's clearly not, like, he's outwardly portraying that he hates everyone. I hate everyone.
Yeah.
That's what he said earlier.
Yeah.
But he's kind enough to bring in these strays and stuff, which is really, really neat.
Right. Shallan sat down on the plush white bed and sank almost down to her neck. What had they made this thing out of? Air and wishes?
Yeah.
That was my alternate title, Air and Wishes. It felt luxurious. In her sitting room, she repeats. I love that it's repeated there.
Yeah, it's her
sitting
room.
Isn't that
great? Yeah.
In her sitting room,
Right.
Thumps announced the footmen arriving with her trunks. They left a moment later, closing the door. For the first time in quite a long time, Shallan found herself not fighting for her survival or worrying about being murdered by one of her traveling companions. So she fell asleep.
Nice little chapter. We get to know
what
a little bit more
little
about Sabariel.
Yeah. I love it. This is a good chapter. Mm-hmm. I love Polona.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And I love Polona, literally. I love her. Highlight for me, Polona, the chapter title. Polona, course.
Yeah, my highlight is Sabariel. Both of them, you know, discovering that Sabariel has been building an economy while everyone's fighting a war.
Don't call me that.
Don't call me that.
Oh, the economy thing. Yeah, that might be my true highlight. Pallone is great, but I don't think it trumps the way in which he has played his role out here in the war. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's really awesome.
Playing the long game. Yep. Chapter 41, Scars.
Yes.
Scars. Mm-hmm. Another excerpta from the from the Words of Radiance.
Excerpta.
This act of great villainy went beyond the impudence which had hitherto been ascribed to the orders. As the fighting was particularly intense at this time, many attributed this act to a sense of inherent betrayal. And after they withdrew, about 2,000 made assault upon them, destroying much of the membership. But this was only 9 of the 10. As one said, they would not abandon their arms and flee, but instead entertained great subterfuge at the expense of the other 9.
So it sounds to me like they're talking about the recreants again.
Yep.
And it sounds like to me that there was one order that did not abandon their oaths. They did not abandon their arms and flee. So of the 10 orders, there was one that did not flee.
Right.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's really cool. One order in which, I guess, honor lived?
Or one that did not... We don't know why the Knights Radiant decided to abandon their oaths, but it seems like one order did not.
Huh.
Or at least that's what this excerpta seems to be implying.
is indicating.
Yeah.
Okay, so Scars, so Kaladin, this is an interesting way of thinking about Kaladin's scars, that's for sure. Kaladin rested his finger on the chasm wall, and he's watching Bridge 17 form up behind him.
Right.
Kaladin was startled to realize that coming down here in the chasms felt more like coming home.
Right.
Than returning to Hearthstone and than his parents would have. The chasms were his.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
It's really cool.
Like going home, like down in this dirt. Again, the journey of Bridge 4, I don't know. It's probably my favorite thing of this whole series so far.
He's trying to replicate that for these men, right? For this Bridge 17. You know, mm-hmm. He thinks to himself, I remember being afraid when I came down here and that these heavy rains could flood them out. But he knows it's important for them to come down here because this is where he was reborn and his men were reborn.
Sure.
And if they could do the same thing for these men, they'll be better off for it.
Sure. Well, and also they'll feel closer to being like Bridge 4.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The lads are ready, sir, says Teft. Where were you the other night? Kaladin says.
Hmm. Remember?
Well, I was off
duty. Do you remember that chapter?
I know. Yeah. This is a little,
a little mystery. A mystoire.
And it's a mystoire. It's trying to indicate that, you know, was Teft somehow involved in the assassination on the king?
Hmm.
Right? On the balcony, right? Isn't that what they're alluding
to,
I think?
That very night, he was gone.
Right. So he's saying, Kaladin's saying, where were you? And then Teft's response is, I was off duty, sir. Went to see what I could find in the market. Do I need to report every little thing I do? Kaladin says, you went to the market? In a high storm? Time may have gotten away from me for a breath or two, Teft says, looking away. Kaladin wanted to press further, but Teft was entitled to his privacy. They're not bridgemen anymore. They don't have to spend all of their time together. They'll start having lives again.
Point of order here, the night that Teft disappears is not the night that the railing was broken, but the night that Zeth attacked.
So that's the difference. Okay, right. But there was someone else that Kaladin was thinking wasn't present or was around. Was it Moash?
Well, by the end of this chapter, he wants to talk to Moash again.
Yeah,
because Moash stayed longer than he was supposed to be. And then one of the other men said, well, I saw Moash go out to the railing.
Right.
So he's meant to ask Moash privately about it.
Yeah.
And he goes to ask him in this chapter and then kind of gets distracted by Moash again here, talking about other stuff, talking about Amaram and his hate and all that stuff.
Doesn't he say something like, you know, I was going to go up to him and basically say, oh, yeah, by the way, were we involved in an assassination attempt? So Bridge 17, a motley crew, criminals. Is how they're described here. Though crimes punishable by bridge duty in Sadius's army could be literally for anything. So they're criminals, you know.
Right. They could fall into debt and then end up being in the bridge crew.
Being a criminal, yeah. Kaladin says, you are Bridge 17 under the command of Sergeant Pitt. You are not soldiers. You may wear the uniforms, but they don't fit you yet. You're playing dress up, and we're going to change that.
Right.
Kaladin says, the chasms are mine. I give you leave to practice here, Sergeant Pitt. Yes, sir, Pitt says. There is a sloppy mess of storm leavings. This is a sloppy mess of storm leavings you've got to work with, but I've seen worse. I find that hard to believe, sir. Believe it, Kaladin says, looking over the men. I was in Bridge 4. Lieutenant Teft, they're yours. Make them sweat.
So I like this. I like this little insult he gives to Bridge 4. Right? He's like, Bridge 17 is a sloppy mess of storm leavings. Meaning, like, you guys are all fucking gross and horrible.
Yeah.
But I've seen worse because I was in worse. I was in Bridge 4.
Right.
So you guys look up to Bridge 4 now, and trust me, Bridge 4 was even worse than what you guys were, and look at what we became. So it's like giving them hope. You might be a mess of storm leavings, but you are better off now than we were when we first entered. Which is really neat.
It is really neat. He wished he could explain to himself why he felt so anxious about getting the men ready. Like he was racing towards something that he didn't know what it was. And then he thinks, 37 days.
So here's this is our, like, you know, by chapter update on the scratchings on the wall, right?
Right. Still is there. She passes in front on the frond of a frill bloom growing on the wall. She asks, what is that you want, Kaladin? And he says, to keep my men alive. No, Syl says, that was what you wanted.
Right.
You're saying I don't want them to be safe? In Bridge 4, you dedicated everything you had to saving them, Syl says. Well, they're saved. You can't go about protecting everyone like a father curl watches over his eggs.
She's exactly. like, exactly. Wait a minute, what's a curl?
Wait a minute. Yeah, she agrees. Wait a minute, what's a curl? A crustacean, Kaladin says. About the size of a small axon. Looks kind of like a cross between a crab and a tortoise. Ooh, she says, I want to see one. They don't live out here.
Yeah.
Kaladin walks with his eyes forward. She pokes him in the neck and he looks at her. So you admit that your men are relatively safe, she says. That means you haven't really answered my question. What do you want? I always love how she's there to, like, get him to think about his positions on things. Like, I just love it.
She's his like fun best friend that like cheers him up when he's down. She's also sort of his therapist who is like, you know, you got to think about these things. Like, what's wrong with you, Kaladin? You have to start smiling. You should laugh more. Like,
right.
Yeah. She's what he would be without her. I have no idea.
No idea, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like she's saved him more times than I think we understand.
So he's like, I want to beat the assassin. That's what he wants.
Well, just before that, I want to touch on one thing before that. So they're down here in the chasms, and of course there are going to be, you know, bodies and things that are down here that are not wonderful to be around. And they're filled with rotspren and lifespren. And it says that little motes of red and green were glowing around. So I just want to touch on this because, you know, it's like a metaphor for, I think, transformation.
Right.
You know, you've got all this death down here, all these bodies and rot, but yet things grow on top like moss and new life, right? So you've got lifespren that are coming out of it too. Yeah, I just think that
he's used this theme before with them being in the chasm, and this is them like kind of reminding us that this is a place of rebirth. You're right.
Right. Right. You said that he says, I want to beat that assassin.
Right.
And then she asks, but why? Because it's my job to protect Dalinar. That's not it, she says. What, you think you've gotten that good at reading human intentions? Not all humans, just you.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah.
Kaladin grunts, stepping carefully around the edge of the dark pool. He'd rather not spend the rest of the day with soaked boots, because these new ones didn't hold the water as well as they should. I just love that he's like
boot reference there.
the new boots that he was forced to get
are
not
as
waterproof.
Good as his old boots. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. Maybe he says, I want to beat the assassin because this is all his fault.
Right.
If he hadn't killed Gavilar, then Tien, my brother, wouldn't have been drafted. And I wouldn't have followed him. Tien wouldn't have died. And then she says here, and you don't think Rishon would have found another way of getting back at your father?
Hmm.
Rishon was the city lord in Kaladin's hometown.
Right.
Sending Tien into the army had been an act of petty vengeance on his part. Yeah, I remember this. That was brutal.
Yeah. So what do you think about this? What do you think about this, like, logic that he's thinking about? Like, if it wasn't for the assassin killing Gavilar, then the war wouldn't have broken out. My brother wouldn't have been drafted. I wouldn't have had to have followed him. He wouldn't have died, and I wouldn't have been a slave. Like, all this stuff is all Zeth's fault. And we know it's not Zeth's fault, because Zeth just does the person who's holding the stone tells him to do. So it's the Parshendi's
fault. I guess it depends. Like, you know, It certainly is a reasonable way, I suppose, from the human condition sort of standpoint, that, you know, you would feel that sense of, you know, a desire to enact vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and that's what he's talking about. If he's thinking about his past and how he was wronged and how there's all this cavalcade of events that have happened that are all as a result of this assassin, then he could definitely look at the assassin and go, you're to blame for everything. So I'm going to, you know, but I think that what she's trying to remind him of is that, well, no, if you desire to battle and do anything with this assassin in white, it's probably because it's because of honor.
Right.
It's because you have something about you that is willing to confront these trying times, confront these things. It's not vengeance, Kaladin. It's, you know, anyways.
She's trying to get down to the deeper root of things, yeah.
Well, that's what I think she's trying to maybe suggest to him, but it's almost like he's not willing to accept that he's honorable. Is that what's kind of going on here?
Maybe.
Huh. I haven't thought about that enough.
He is honorable. Hmm. We've seen him do it, right?
Right.
He achieved the second ideal when he jumped that chasm, and that was one of the most honorable thing men have done in a long time, right?
I love that moment.
But you're right. There is a part of him that is holding on to these unhonorable thoughts. Revenge.
Right.
Punishment.
And vengeance. Yeah.
You know, like all this stuff. So
the
you're
dark
right.
side.
There is there is a dark side. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's there. Okay. So Rishon, City Lord, he probably would have done something else, Kaladin says. Still, that assassin deserves to die.
Right. And we know that he technically maybe does deserve to die, but we know that it's not his fault. We know that that Zeth regrets everything he's done.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
So when it comes
Kaladin
down to it, he
doesn't know any of this.
This is one of those, again, moments where we have more information than the character, right?
So. Yes, right. Okay, well, he heard the others before he reached them. Their voices were echoing, so he's walking over towards where Sigsel and others are. And Sigsel says, well, what I'm trying to explain is that nobody seems to be asking the right questions. We call the Parshendi savages, and everyone says that they haven't ever met until that day they encountered the Alethi expedition. If those things are true, then what storm brought them a Shin assassin?
Mm-hmm.
A Shin assassin who can surge bind, no less. So it's on everybody's mind. Like they're all talking about the assassin, right?
Right.
So Sigsel, Rock, and Lopin, we're all waiting for Kaladin. And then Kaladin says, are you implying that the assassin in white never really worked for the Parshendi? Or are you implying that the Parshendi lied about being as isolated as they claimed? Sigsel says, I'm not implying anything.
Yeah.
My master trained me to ask questions, so I'm asking them. Something doesn't make sense about this whole matter. The Shin are extremely xenophobic. They rarely leave their lands, and you never find them working as mercenaries. Now this one goes about assassinating kings with a shard blade? Is he still working for the Parshendi? And if so, why did they wait so long to unleash him against us again?
So remember, Dalinar has had some of these thoughts as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember he said it almost feels like the Parshendi are being set up this time.
Right.
And Sigzil, our resident brainiac, is asking the right questions. He was trained properly by Wit or Hoid, right?
Right.
He was trained by Hoid. So he's asking the questions that need to be asked. This is very handy to have someone in Bridge 4 like this.
I like that this conversation is happening within Bridge 4. I think it's cool.
Yeah, me too.
Kaladin says, does it matter who he's working for? Of course it does, says Sigzil. Well, why? Well, because it's a question, he said, as if offended.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, discovering his true employer might give us a clue to their goal, and knowing that might help us defeat him.
Right.
Kaladin smiles and then tries to run it. I love these sentences. Yeah. Oh, man, I just love how you could be talking about something, and then Brandon's like, Kaladin smiles at this, and then tried running up the wall.
Right.
just the sudden abrupt change. I just think it's delightful. That's
it's
all.
Really funny.
After falling to the ground, ending up on his back, he sighed. So he tries it. It's not happening. Rock leans over and says, "Is fun to watch, but this thing, you are certain she can work?" The assassin walked on the ceiling, Kaladin says. Yeah, but are you sure? This is Sigzil now. Are you sure he wasn't just doing what we did? Using the Stormlight to stick one object to another? He could have sprayed the ceiling with Stormlight and then jumped up and stuck there.
Yeah.
No, says Kaladin. No. He jumped up and landed on that ceiling. Then he ran down the wall and sent Adolin to the ceiling somehow. The prince didn't stick there. He fell that way.
Yeah, this is an important distinction.
Yeah. At the end of it all, the assassin, he flew away.
Yeah.
Okay, ha, Lopin says. I knew it.
Lopin.
When we have this figured out, the king of all Herdaz, he will say to me, Lopin, you are glowing, and this is impressive, but you can also fly, and for this, you may marry my daughter. And Sigzil's like, the king of Herdaz doesn't have a daughter. He doesn't? I've been lied to all this time?
This is really funny, dude. This is really funny, because a couple of things. One, they say, you don't even know your royal family? Like, he doesn't know anything about his own people? But the funny thing is that Lopin still thinks that when they've got this all figured out, he's going to get powers too. Like, he totally thinks that he's going to get powers too. He's like, I'm going to be able to fly. I'm going to be glowing.
Like, you don't know your royal family? Yeah, it's funny.
This super rare thing that happened to Kaladin is, you know, Lopin's like, you're just going to figure it out and then teach me. It's going to be super easy. It's really funny.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
Kaladin says, do you know how this works? And asking Syl.
Right. And this is when she's like, Sigzil being like, you know, I wish I could see her.
Yeah, I know. Right. And Kaladin's like, but the assassin is a windrunner. And then she's like, I think something like you, maybe. So she doesn't really know much about that. She can't really help Kaladin terribly in that department.
No,
but you're right. Sigzil's like, I really want to see her. And then boop, she appears.
She pops up.
And then. And he's like, oh my gosh, a tiny little person.
Yeah. And then she corrects him. She's like, I'm a she. Yeah, I'm a she, not an it. And then we get this really cool part here where she's like, doesn't that bother you that you might be a creation of human perception?
Right. And then she's like, you're a creation of your parents.
Right.
Who cares how we were born? I can think that's good enough.
Yeah.
She grins and then zips off. And she stops in front of Gaz and then appears in front of him and then looks like him.
In front of Sigzil.
Or Sigzil, sorry.
Yeah,
and he says, Gah, again. And he's like, she talks like a real person. He raises a hand to his head. The stories say the Night Watcher might be capable of that. Powerful Spren. Vast Spren. And then she's like, is he calling me Vast? I'm not sure that I like what I think of that.
Right.
And again, I was that Tinkerbell kind of reference, like, you know, holding onto her hips over the mirror. Like, am I a certain size? Why does he call me Vast?
Like, absolute tiny. And how could she be Vast? Yeah, yeah. You're right, dude. Yeah. Your Tinkerbell stuff does come back all the time.
Yeah. Sigzil Kaladin says, could the Windrunners fly?
Right. And then Sigzil's like, listen, I don't know that stuff. I'm a I'm a teller of places and of people. Like, my whole thing is to make the world smaller, and I can help men understand each other. So I go to Azir, I learn about stuff in Azir, and then I bring it to Alfkar, and I tell people in Alfkar what people in Azir really are like, to try to break down these like assumptions between people, you know? It's really,
Kaladin
really cool.
Kaladin says, well, we've got to figure this out. The assassin's going to come back.
Yeah.
And then Rock's like, well, why don't you jump on the wall some more? And I won't. I promise I won't laugh. And he picks up a... This is gross.
This is awesome.
He picks up a small crab and puts it in his mouth and starts chewing. Come on. Sigzil's like, ew. And he's like, it tastes good, but is better with salt and oil. But he's perfectly willing to chew it up raw.
Right. Everything tastes better with salt and oil, though, Rock. Like, really.
I'm not sure about ice cream, but maybe. Kaladin says... Kaladin is drawing in more Stormlight, so he's going to try to do this.
Yeah.
And the way it's described, it's like the Stormlight is trying to escape. It's in his veins, it's in his arteries.
Yeah.
But it's motivating, is daring him to jump, to move, or to do.
Right.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, so he's like kind of powering up here. And Sigzil wants to talk more about the Assassin in White and whether or not it's related to the railing. And he asks him, you know, do we think the Assassin White had to do with something with a sabotage in the King's Railing? And then Rock's like, well, why would he do this?
Why would he kill
him more easily, right?
I think that's a very good point, is that if the Assassin in White was involved in that, why would he do that?
He would just attack them like he's always done, right?
Right.
Right.
So why would... Yeah.
Lopin's like, the railing was probably done by one of the other high princes, which Rock agrees. Yeah, you're probably right. All the high princes want the king dead. So one of them probably sent the saboteur. And there's this moment here where Sigzil is trying to ask directly a question to Cal. Like, how smooth was the railing cut? Right?
Oh, yeah. He's like, how?
And but Kaladin is not paying attention to these questions. He's zoned out.
No,
read this
he's somewhere
part
else.
Here where Kaladin narrowed his eyes. Yeah.
Oh,
read this
I love
part.
That bit. Kaladin narrows his eyes, watching that Stormlight rise. It was raw power. No, power was the wrong term. It was a force, like the surges that ruled the universe. They made fire burn, made rocks fall, made light glow. These wisps. They were surges reduced to some primal form, and he could use it. So I love this so much, dude, because it's the first time that it's referred to as a force. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm, as you are too, like we were both huge Star Wars fans as kids and still are. Mm-hmm. And I just found that referring to it as a force, not just raw power. I really like that.
Yeah, it's like it's the he says the.
I mean, it's a surge,
a primal form of like it's not just power.
No, it's not just power.
It's the things that make the universe work. Yeah,
right.
And we kind of sort of talked about this a couple episodes ago, our last episode, when I read to you a list of all the surges that make Roshar
go.
So he's kind of zoning out, and he's like. Kind of stumbling on something here. He's figuring it out. And the Sigzil's like, Hey Cal, how smooth was the railing cut? He's like trying to distract him. And Cal's like,
he's trying to get an answer. Like he's already asked the question, how smooth was the cut?
Right.
And then he's zoning out and he's not listening. Their voices are fading from his mind.
Right.
And then he has to repeat it like, Cal, how smooth was the cut to the railing?
Right. And then there's
could it have been a shard blade?
And there's this little part here. Yeah. He says, that for a moment, Kaladin thought he saw shadows of a world that was not. Shadows of another place. And in that place, a distant sky with a sun enclosed, almost as if by a corridor of clouds.
Yeah. There is what he says. Yeah.
And he made the direction of the wall become down. It's like he connected it in his brain.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of what to do. He connected it. And then all of a sudden, he's falling towards the wall. Like it was down. He's literally changed gravity for himself, but not for the others.
For himself only. That's right. Yeah, that's a really neat thing that it's not the objective reality that he's affecting. It's the subjective. It's his own consciousness, his own world.
Right.
His own world within worlds, I guess.
Because he's got the, like you said just now, he's got the primal force of
Oh, I love it.
You know, of the, one of the surges of Roshar coursing through him. Right. Like he's got this power, this, no, that's not power, but a primal force in
the
him.
The force, right, I know.
Being able to affect one of the 10 surges of Roshar.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's affecting gravity here.
Right.
But, like you said, only for himself, only which is really himself. Fucking cool.
This, yet it's so funny how only for yourself, but yet others can observe it.
Right.
Right? So that's also
and
interesting.
And then he thinks to himself.
This Kaladin thinks is going to get confusing. And Lopin's like, wow. Yeah, this is really going to be fun. Can you run up the wall again, Cho?
Yeah.
And then he does so. And then Syl streaks out in front of him and she's encouraging him. She's like, come on, Kaladin, come out onto the plateau into the sunlight. And he's like, yeah, but there's scouts up there watching out for gem hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Come out anyway. Stop hiding, Kaladin.
This is really important.
And then he says,
she's only ever wanted him to admit it to everyone. She's like, tell Dalinar, tell everyone, stop hiding who you are.
Who you are.
Just be you. Fly up into the air, like run out of these chasms, jump out of the air, and just be who you want to be. You know?
Yeah. Be a wind runner.
Yeah.
I have to know, he whispers, and she's like, no, you asked me why I protect Dalinar, and I have to know if he really is what he seems to be, Syl.
Right.
I have to know if one of them can live up to their reputation. And she's like, tell you. And she becomes the image of a full-size woman again. So here she is, just like in Hook, once again, full-size.
This is only
the
second
time him as a
the second time that she's done this, right? She's been a full-sized woman now, and the other time was when she admitted to Cal, she finally realized, I am Honor Spren. That's the only other time she's been a full-sized woman.
She was nearly as tall as he was. Her dress was fading into mist, and she says, tell you what? And he says, if Honor is dead. And she says, he is. So I like how it's like Honor is he.
Right.
Is a pronoun.
Right.
Right? Interesting. But he lives on in men and in me. Dalinar Colan is a good man, she assures him. Yeah, but he's friends with Amaram. How could... He could be the same inside. You don't believe that. Yeah, but I have to know, Syl.
Yeah.
He tried to take her arm. This little moment here, I have to know. It's almost like Luke confronting Yoda. Like, look, I have to know. You know, is Darth Vader my father?
Right.
Like it's an interesting little moment. Like he needs this from her right now so badly. You need to assure me, Syl, that I'm not wasting my time here.
Yeah.
Like I'm barely hanging on as it is. I'm now discovering all of these powers.
Right.
Well, sorry, these surges, this force within me. And I was saying to you before, I think that that Kaladin, he's afraid of losing a Dalinar.
Right.
That's what scares him, is that if Dalinar Colan ends up being like Amaram, ends up being like Sadeas, ends up being like every bright lord that has disappointed him or taken from him or stolen from him or inflicted hurt on others that he cares about.
Right.
If that's what Dalinar's going to end up being, then I think that he will lose all hope.
Right.
And I think that he may just say, then none of them are worth my talents, my time. None of them are worth saving.
Right. I would also point out that he's also expressed a fear of losing Syl.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
That they'll take you away from
her. Yeah, exactly. Yeah I know that too. Yeah.
That's also a very important part here.
That's the one that I certainly got from Way of Kings as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think here, I think with the expression in this part of Words of Radiance, I think that losing Dalinar is a very big deal.
Right.
I think it's a game changer, I think, for Kaladin's character.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And that's why he's confronting her. Like, I need to know.
Yeah.
You don't believe that. I have to know, Syl. I just can't believe it. I need to know. You ask me what I want. Well, that's it. I want to know if I can trust Dalinar. If I can, I'll tell him what I can do. I will believe this. Sorry, I will believe that at least one Light Eyes won't try to take everything from me. Like Roshon, like Amaram, like Sadeas.
Right.
And she says, and that's what it will take? I warned you that I was broken, Syl. And she says, no, you've been reforged. It can happen to men. To other men, yes, he says, feeling the scars on his forehead. why hadn't they ever healed?
Yeah.
Why hadn't the Stormlight ever healed those scars?
Yeah, it's weird, eh?
What do you think?
I mean, I've said to you...
Or do you know?
I've said... No, I don't know. I've said to you before that when I was first reading these books, my feeling was that the scars are a physical representation of the mental scars that he carries.
Right.
And that those won't ever go away until he feels complete inside.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's good. Why the Stormlight never healed them? He says, I'm not certain about myself yet, but I will protect Dalinar Colan with everything I have. I will learn who he is, who he really is. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll give him his Knight's Radiant.
Right.
And Amaram, she says, what of him? Him I'm going to kill. Kaladin, don't let this destroy you. It can't. Amaram already took care of that.
Right. And this is when
that's harsh.
It's pretty
harsh,
man. Yeah, he feels like Amaram can't take any more from him. Like he, you know, he's like, I'm gonna kill this guy. There's nothing anybody can do to stop me. I'm gonna fucking kill this guy. And then he falls back down to the ground. Like the ground reasserts itself. So the chasm's no longer the ground. The ground's the ground.
Right.
And he falls down, sucks in Stormlight. He twists in the air, and then he friggin' does like a Matrix superhero landing here.
You know, and then Rock is there. Rock is like, that was very fast way to get down, but it did not include falling on the face, which would have been fun. So you only get the soft clap. That's funny.
I really love
Rock. He's so great. And then Kaladin does answer the question finally. The king's railing was cut with a shard blade, Sigzil. And no, it wasn't the assassin in white. That attempt on Elokar's life was too crude. What's more, he says, the railing must have been cut after the high storm that night. Otherwise, the wind would have blown the railing out of shape.
Right.
So our saboteur, a shard bearer, somehow got out onto the balcony after the storm. And the Lopin's like, we're supposed to believe that one of the camp's shard bearers snuck through the palace and got onto the balcony and nobody noticed him? Could somebody else have done this thing and walk up it?
This is it here, man. This is the biggest moment of the chapter here, I think, when Sigzil's
offering another idea.
What about a rope? It's like, if I wanted to sneak a shard bearer in, I'd bribe some servant to let down a rope. One could be smuggled onto the railing easily, maybe wrapped around the servant's body. Under their clothes, the saboteur and their friends can make their way up to the up the rope, cut the railing, and then like dig at the mortar, then climb back down, and then the accomplice just cuts the rope, and everything's like there's no evidence.
That's it, nice and neat and tidy.
It's very smart from Sigzil here.
Yeah, I think so too. But him also offering it, it's kind of like, well, you're thinking of it, so that means you could act on doing it.
Yeah, I guess
because you're thinking of it.
You've had something about Sigzil this whole time.
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think I did initially when he was like, Kaladin, I want to know everything you can do and I want to document it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little nervous about that in Way of Kings. I was like, why are you so interested in knowing everything about it?
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe my guard was up a little bit there.
Right. But this is a really astute way of looking at how the railing could have got cut. Without a shard bearing being let into the palace, right?
Yeah.
And what a great
cover. I just got to say this, though. What a great cover if Sigzil was involved. I'm not saying he is, but what a great cover then to bring up what?
Killer brings it up to Kaladin. The investigation himself to.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He just says it. He's like, oh, yeah, this is how.
This is how
and
you
then
do
it's
it.
Like. It seems to absolve him a little bit because he's, you know, I don't know.
But this does seem to be something that the rest of the group kind of goes, yeah, you know what? That's actually really astute. And then Sigzil's like, I'll ask around. And then Cal's like, no, you're not going to ask.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he says, don't speak a word of this to anyone. I want to see what I can find.
I think the reason why he says this is because he thinks a little earlier Moash had been on that balcony between the storm and the king's near fall. So he doesn't want anyone else to go around asking people. He already has someone he can ask, someone he trusts. So he wants to be the one to kind of approach Moash. You know what I mean? To be like, hey, what do you know about this?
Well, we get this little... After they settle that, they want him to start jumping again. He's like, more tests.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. But then he says, wait a sec, There was no need to go moving all the remains around. Like, he's motioning to an area that's been cleared away, and Sigsel's like, well, cleared it away. Mm-hmm. And then when he looks at it, he realizes that there's deep gouges where the moss had been scraped off on the sides of the rock, and he's like, wait a sec, no. Yeah. You guys didn't clear this away. This was caused from a chasm fiend. And then he's thinking, I didn't think they came this close to the war camps. So he's actually looking at evidence that suggests that a chasm fiend was just through here.
Right. Exactly. That's where they exactly are. What it was. Yeah.
And he's saying, maybe we shouldn't train down here.
Yeah.
And then just before we get the scene change, Rock is like, he's gone now. Otherwise we'd have been eaten. It's obvious. So let's get back to training. And then Kaladin nods that, okay, we'll do that. But the gouges were haunting him as he practiced.
Right. They've been very lucky to not get caught by a chasm fiend. The amount of times they've been down here, they've been very lucky to not encounter one. They saw one time, and it was going the other direction. So these guys are really fucking lucky, because this could devastate Kaladin and his mental state if he had lost like a whole bridge crew down here.
Right.
All right. So we get a scene change here.
Yeah. A few hours later.
Yeah. So the Kaladin arrives back at Bridge 17's barracks, and the men seem more lively than they had when going into the chasms, which is really cool.
Because they've had a transformation.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is really cool. Right? They're even more delighted when they see the stew is ready for them. They have their own cook pot, their own cook that's making the stew, which is awesome.
That's what I love the most, is it says here they have apprentice chefs of Rocks doing this. So it's like the training is passed on. Yeah. So even the stew now is being passed
all
on.
All these different bridge crews have their own mini rocks, these little pebbles, let's say, over there.
Pebbles.
They have their own pebbles. Making,
pebble, hey.
Go and make stew.
Stone dust, please make more stew.
Don't put dung in the stew, though.
but something was wrong, Kaladin notes.
Yeah.
And then Tef says, something's off. Kaladin says, yeah. They were clumped together on one side of the fire.
He's noticing
Bridge 17 is what he's talking about.
No, he's talking about when he got back to his own camp. When they get back to Bridge 4... Yeah, they leave Bridge 17's camp, go to Bridge 4's barracks, and that's when they notice something's wrong. And the thing that's wrong
was Bridge 4 that was separate, it wasn't Bridge 17.
Yeah, so they come back from the chasms with Bridge 17, bring them to their barracks. The men seem in better moods now that there's stew there as well. And then when they get back, when Teft, Sigsel, Lopin, Rock all come back to
their own barrack.
Yeah,
right.
That's
now,
when they notice
right.
something's wrong. And the thing that's wrong is Prince Renarin's there. He's sitting there waiting for Cal.
But it's his own men that are...
Acting weird because that
are acting weird. They're on. Was it say? It says they're on the different. They're on different sides of the fire.
Right.
Their laughter was forced. Their postures were nervous. When you train men for war, they started to use combat stances whenever they were uncomfortable, and something on the other side of that fire was a threat.
Right. And
that's interesting.
The thing that's the least most threat in all of the war camps. Renarin.
Right. Kaladin stepped into the light and found a man sitting there in a nice uniform, hands down, head bowed, and it was Renarin Kolan. Kaladin says, Bright Lord, is there something you need? I would like to serve under your command, sir. And he's calling him sir.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Right.
Let's talk away from the fire, Bright Lord. Yeah. Sir, Renarin says, speaking softly, you shouldn't call me sir, Kaladin says. You're a light-eyed. Storms, you're the son of the most powerful man in Eastern Roshar. I want to be in Bridge 4, Renarin says. Mm-hmm. You can't be in Bridge 4. We're bodyguards for your own family. What are you going to do? Guard yourself? I won't be a liability, sir. I won't work hard. Notice how he won't change it either. Like, he will still call him sir, even though he's told him not to.
Right.
Isn't that great?
Renarin's really great.
No, you are, to me, you are a sir. Right. I'm calling you sir.
And you know what? You know where that comes from? That comes from Dalinar.
Yeah.
That comes from the respect and from Dalinar's teachings, right?
I'll work hard, sir. I don't doubt you would, Renarin, but look, why do you want to be in Bridge 4? My father and my brother, they're warriors, they're soldiers, and I'm not, if you haven't noticed. Yes, something about physical ailments, Renarin says. I've had a I have a blood weakness, he says. That's a folk description of many different conditions, Kaladin says. What do you really have? I'm epileptic. It means, yes, it's an idiopathic or is it idiopathic or symptomatic?
Mm-hmm.
I love this because that's the surgeon coming out, right?
Yes.
Isn't that great?
It's really cool. This is a really awesome part.
And then Renarin
is diagnosing him.
He's like, because he was just asked, is it idiopathic or symptomatic?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, was it caused by a specific brain injury, Kaladin asks? Or is it something that just started to happen for no reason?
Right.
I've had it since I was a kid. Well, how bad are the seizures? Well, they're fine. It's not as bad as everyone says. It's not like I fall on the ground or froth the mouth like everyone thinks. My arm will jerk a few times or I'll twitch uncontrollably for a few moments. You retain consciousness? Yeah. Myoclonic, probably. You've been given bitter leaf to chew? Yes, I don't know if it helps. The jerking isn't the whole problem. A lot of the times when it's happening, I get really weak, particularly along one side of my body. Huh, Kaladin says. I suppose that it could fit in with the seizures, but have you ever had any persistent relaxation of the muscles? An inability to smile on one side of your face, for example? No. How do you know these things? Aren't you a soldier? I know some field medicine.
Yeah, this is funny.
Field medicine for epilepsy? Kaladin's like, well, I could see why they didn't want you going into battle. I've seen men with wounds that cause similar symptoms, and the surgeons always dismissed those men from duty. It's no shame to not be fit enough for battle, Bright Lord. Not every man is needed for fighting. So I think what's interesting here is it says, I've seen men with wounds that have caused similar symptoms.
Right.
So does that mean that Renarin has suffered a wound that's made in this way?
No, he's just saying that, like, this is how I know, because I've seen people get hurt in battle,
right,
and then they end up having these kinds of symptoms. That's how
having
I know.
These,
without
right,
really
and that's
revealing
all I was
he's
saying
a surgeon, was, right.
Right. All I'm saying, yeah, if Renarin is exhibiting these symptoms, then does that mean that he...
He would know if he's wounded, like if he's got a gash
right.
or some kind of wound, they would know.
I just was wondering if it was a secret part of Renarin's past.
Maybe, like a severe concussion or some kind of head trauma or something.
Just something that's
something
happened
that's
to Renarin
not necessarily
that we
visible.
Don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure, Renarin says, everyone tells me that. Then they all go back to fighting. The Ardents, they claim every calling is important, but then... What they do teach about, but then what do they teach about the afterlife? That it's a big war to reclaim the Tranquiline Halls. That's the best, that the best soldiers in this life are glorified in the next. Kaladin says, if the afterlife is a big war, Kaladin says, then I hope I end up in damnation. At least there I might be able to get a wink or two of sleep, regardless. You're no soldier. That's funny. At least I might be able to get a wink of or two of sleep.
Yeah.
And Renarin says to your no soldier, he says, I want to be.
Right.
And then he says, Bright Lord, you don't have to set me to doing anything important, Renarin says. I came to you instead of one of the other battalions because most of your men spend their time patrolling. If I'm patrolling, I won't be in much danger and my fits won't hurt anyone. But at least I can see and I can feel what it's like.
And then Cal's like, and then Renarin just like rushes through here and like trying to kind of, I'll obey your commands.
Yeah.
You can treat me like a new recruit. When I'm here, I'm not a prince's son. I'm not even a Light Eyes. I'm just another soldier. I just want to be a part of it. And I love this part here when he says, when Adolin was young, my father made him serve in a spearman squad for 2 months. And then Cal's like, yeah, he did? Really? And then he said, Father said every soldier should serve in the shoes of his men. I have shards now, and I'm going to be in a war, but I've never felt like what's like to be a real soldier. I think this is the closest I'll ever get. Please. He's like begging Cal,
begging.
Just please let me be part of this.
And then he's like, am I really considering this?
Yeah.
And Renarin's like, I should probably point out how much easier it will be to guard me if I'm spending time training with your men. Your resources are thin, sir. Having one fewer person to protect must be appealing.
Right.
The only times I'll leave are the days when I practice with my shards under Swordmaster's Dale. Kaladin's like, you really want to be a soldier? Yes, sir. Okay, go take those dirty stew bowls and wash them. Then you can help Rock clean this cauldron and put away the cooking implements. Yes, sir. Renarin snaps with enthusiasm.
Yeah, well, no, CC, you didn't say it right. It says, Renarin said with enthusiasm. He says, yes, sir! Right. That's what that's how he says it. Yes, sir!
In your high-pitched Renarin voice, which is preposterous.
Well, I got to do it for Papino. Papino is the only one that really
loves
gotta
it.
So.
You got to do it for the Papino.
Yeah.
Moash had refused to hand his bowl to Renarin, washing it himself. You're really going to let him join?
Yeah.
This is Moash interjecting.
Yeah, Moash.
I'll speak to his father tomorrow, Kaladin says. Get the High Prince's read on it. I don't like it, Moash says. Bridge four, our nightly conversations. Those things are supposed to be safe from them, you know? Yeah, Kaladin says, but he's a good kid. I think if any Light Eyes could fit in here, he could. Moash raises an eyebrow. You disagree, I presume? No, he doesn't act right, Cal. The way he talks, the way he looks at people, he's strange. That's not important, though. He's light-eyed, and that should be enough. It means we can't trust him. We don't need to. We're just going to keep an eye on him. Maybe try to train him to defend himself. Moash grunts, nodding. So here we have Moash displaying, like, maybe even further than Kaladin, that he doesn't trust Light Eyes.
Yeah, under no circumstances.
He's just like, no. Like,
even the most innocent,
this is a bad idea.
Gentle, like, non-threatening Light Eyes we've ever met, Renarin Kolin.
Right.
He's all like, we can't trust him, he's Light Eyes. So it's just a blanket hate towards them at all. But he does relent, and he seems to accept this as a good reason for letting Renarin stay. And then Cal's like, I got Moash here. Nobody else is close. I should ask him about...
Yeah.
And then he's like, how am I going to ask this? Are you, hey, Moash, are you involved in plotting to kill the king?
Hey, Moash. Oh, by the way, we're just talking about Renarin. Yeah, I forgot to ask you this earlier. I might as well ask you now. Were you involved in a plot to kill the king? I just was wondering.
Yeah, I was just wondering. Like, I know it's
that's
weird.
That's so funny, dude. I love it.
Yeah.
And then, but he doesn't actually ask him that. He says, have you thought about what we're going to do, Moash says, regarding Amaram? Amaram is my problem. You're bridge four, Moash says. The problem is our problem.
Yeah, Cal gets distracted here by the talk of something, even something that he really, really hates. It really distracts him.
Which is
Amaram.
Yeah. Well, you got to wonder if Moash is playing him there. Your problem is our problem. He's the one who made you a slave. He did more than that, Kaladin says. He killed my friends, Moash, right before my eyes. He's a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then something has to be done, Moash says. It does. But what? You think I should go to the authorities?
Right.
Moash laughs. What are they going to do? You have to get the man into a duel, Kaladin. Bring him down, man against man.
Yeah.
Until you do it, something's going to feel wrong to you, deep down in your gut. You sound like you know what this feels like. Yeah, I have some Voidbringers in my past, too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why I understand you. Maybe that's why you understand me. Well, then what? I don't really want to talk about it, Moash says. We're bridge four, Koash says. Like you said, your problems are mine. What did the king do to your family, Moash, is what Kaladin's thinking inside.
Right.
Suppose that's true, Moash says. Not tonight. I just want to relax. Moash, Tef calls from near the fire. Are you coming? I am, Moash calls back. What about you, Lopin? You ready?
Yeah, the boys are all going out on the town here.
Yeah. I love this so much.
They're going to hit up some taverns, play some rings, get something to drink.
Yeah.
It's good.
I am the Lopin says, I am the Lopin, which means I am ready for anything at any time. You should know this by now. Nearby, Drahi snorts and flips a chunk of stewed longroot at Lopin, which just splatters against his face.
Yeah.
And Lopin just keeps talking as if nothing's happened. He says, as you can see, I was perfectly ready for that, as shown by the poise I display as I make this decidedly rude gesture.
Yeah.
So he must
give
like
the finger. Yeah. yeah. This is really cool, though. The boys want to go out and hang out, and they ask Cal, you coming, Cal? And he's like, where?
You gotta
he's
come?
Like, oh, yeah, we're going to go hit some taverns, do this and that. And then he's like, yeah, I probably ought to stay. Got to go look
I'll
in the
go
fires with the other crews, right? Kind of comes up with a lame excuse not to go.
Come on, Cal. You can always work. You can't always work. I'll go another time. Fine, says Moash. Syl left the fire where she'd been dancing with a flame spren. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
She's dancing with a flame spren. That's awesome. Why didn't you go? She asks. I can't live that life anymore still, is what Kaladin says. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. But she says, Kaladin walks away from her and gets a bowl of stew.
Yeah. So he's grumpy Gus, doesn't want to go hang out with his friends.
Not going out.
No.
He's not going to Tashi Station.
No, he's not. What do you think about this chapter? It's a little all over the place. Scars, there's a lot going on in this chapter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
I think you described it as meh.
Yeah, I think I liked it better covering it with you than when I was reading it. I'll say that.
Okay.
So covering it now, I think I understand the chapter a bit more. So these scars are not going away. The impact that Amaram and the other
Light Eyes
have inflicted on Kaladin's life, those scars just aren't going away.
Right.
He is contemplating vengeance. He's admitted fully, I'm going to kill Amaram. I need to know if Dalinar is still good, an honorable man. If he isn't, it's going to affect me, Syl. I need to. He's basically, the healer is confronting Syl, like, you know, in a very kind of I need to know, like, I'm not letting you get away from this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's a little invasive,
a little pushy.
Yeah, it was a little pressy. Yeah.
Pressy.
So I don't know. So the scar, yeah, it's a great chapter. What's my highlight? Oh, geez, I don't know. I haven't, we should probably start with yours because
I got a few. I'll make them short and sweet. Cal walking on the wall. Amazing.
Sure. Yeah.
And in that, coupled with that, is this moment where he kind of starts to put things together. And there's that moment where
I
think he, like, this is my read on it. Okay.
Yeah.
That he seems to see Shadesmar. For a moment, Cal thought he saw
the
shadows of a world that was not. Shadows of another place. And in that place, a distant sky with a sun enclosed almost as if by a corridor of clouds.
So he almost sees
this other world, and then that allows him to connect the dots on how he's able to use his power. So we've had this image before from other characters, Yasna and Shallan. So it's really cool. Cal is starting to figure some stuff out. My main highlight, though, is
Sigzil's observation.
There's that, but it's the whole idea that Cal considers Moash a true friend, right? But he trusts Rock, Lopin, and Sigzil with the most important thing, which is his training and how he's going to be able to use Stormlight. None of these other guys, Drahi, Scar, Moash, none of these other characters are there. It's only ever Rock, Lopin, and Sigzil.
And he trusts these
three with this most important information. You know, he doesn't want really anybody to know about what he's doing yet. And he's even keeping his training away from all of Bridge Four, except for these three men. And I just really like this little inner circle. One's really smart. One's kind of a dumbass. And the other one is huge and surprisingly wise. So I just really love the mix of these three. And like we've said, Lopin thinks out of the box, right? Lopin's the one that said, why don't you, instead of sticking stuff to wall, see if you can use that in a fight. You know?
Right.
So this mix of these three men really bring out the best in him. And I really like it. I just like this little crew. The Chasm crew.
I think Sigzo's observation is a really, really good moment. But I guess my highlight would have to be still urging Kaladin to be. Mm-hmm. So once he's figured out this new power and an understanding of this surge and this perspective having changed and using it, she's like, come on, like, let it explode out of you. Let's go up top. Let's
show everyone. You know, just be.
Show us, you know, just be. And again, you know, he's questioning and you know, lands and doesn't do it. And like but I think her wanting that out of him is probably my highlight still of the chapter.
It's cool. It's like if
I had to pick a dark highlight, it would be that these scars remain. That Kaladin is just, he's really not that far off from Moash.
No. Yeah, it's weird,
But I'll say this. He doesn't want to be where Moash is.
No.
That's why he's asking Syl.
Right.
You know, I need to know
Syl. I need to know if I can trust. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he feels like he can trust him. The thing The thing that's holding him back from that trust is the fact that Dalinar is friends with Amaram. And that's right. significant. If you're friends with a real fucking asshole, how can I trust you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you see something great in this real fucking asshole, this horrible murderer, then how am I ever supposed to trust you if you can't even trust your own judgment? Yeah. If you can't see this guy for who he is, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
I think it totally makes sense. If only Dalinar could show Kaladin how he perhaps really feels about Amaram and his crimes.
Yeah, that's going to have to definitely be resolved before any real trust between these two characters can really really happen.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have no quick transition here for the info dump, only because we're running really late. This is going to end up being a little bit longer of a two-hour episode.
This is a long one.
Yeah, it is. We had to do the three episodes together because of the way I formatted the series, so we had to do it this way. So let's get through the info dump. Quickly, Shamespren, translucent flower petals. I really like that. I think it's really cool. We talked a little bit about during the episode here about how sometimes Spren give away your feelings and, you know, how shitty that is. You can't keep your feelings to yourself. Mm-hmm. They mentioned that the roads are centered by flagstones so that this way there is a side to each side, just like our roads, which is really, really interesting. I never would have thought that there'd be, you know, in these kinds of fantasy worlds, a line in the middle of the roads that you can, you know, one wagon goes on one side, one wagon goes on the other side. We never really see that. We just see these, like, cobbled together, like, dingy roads, but this seems to be thought out, so it's really neat. Pelona tells Shallan about the storm cisterns, which is these big containers that hold the storm water from the high storms, and that welcome to civilization. And the way that they're made sifts out the creme, but you have to wait till midday the next day to actually use it, or the water is going to be brown. Like if you go into like a creepy haunted house, the water is always brown for some reason. Cal mentions a curl, which is a cross between a crab and a tortoise, and Syl is very excited to see one of those.
What's a curl?
The other thing that I found really interesting is that Lopin says there are as many Hardasians in Alethkar and Yakaved as there are in his own homeland. And, you know, we haven't heard a lot about immigration in Stormlight Archive yet. A lot of the cultures seem to stay in their homeland, but the Hardasians, from what he said, have immigrated out into the world, and they're everywhere. As you can see, there's always another cousin around the corner for Lopin,
Cousins.
It's really cool. That's it for the info dump. The next episode that we are going to be doing is let me just quickly flip. We are going to be doing two chapters, chapter 42 and 43. So if you're reading along with us, make sure that you only read the two chapters. You want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/heroesof. There are several different tiers that you can join up with. Some of them allow you to have the Discord link so that you can come and join in the conversation with us. You'll be able to even get the links to the Ugly Mugs episodes that we do on the weekends. We've been kind of doing them every second weekend now, which is kind of our new thing. There are other tiers where you can get bonus material and all kinds of goodies. So just take a look at patreon.com/heroesof for more information. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofhakathra@gmail.com. You can also do so at Twitter of Heroes of One, which I'm barely on, but you can find us there. I'll always keep checking if that's your preferred way. My preferred way is I'm always on Instagram checking out the fan art. It's just one of my absolute favorite things about doing this show is that I just get to pour over all this fan art. The artists are just so amazing. Thank you to Yulvia and Connor J. Chamberlain and Botanica XU and all kinds of, you know, Lamory and the Cosmere, all these different people that have allowed us to use their art over the last little while we've been doing this. We really appreciate it, and we just love them so much. So so thank you very much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode, and hopefully we will see you next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray.
produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the heroes of Akathra.